Get ready for the greatest roast of all time. The Roast of Tom Brady. A Netflix live event happening May 5th. Hosted by Kevin Hart. The seven-time world champion gets his cleats held to the fire by famous friends and frenemies on an unforgettable night where everything is fair game. Tune in on May 5th at 5 p.m. Pacific time for The Roast of Tom Brady. Live only on Netflix.
You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with the Fall Guy.
What are you doing later?
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes!
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy.
That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make it out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah. Okay.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
Here we go, the official show on the Fish Stripes podcast. I'm Eli Sussman, along with Hector Rodriguez. This episode presented by Symbol, the stock market for sports. You know what we do on this pod, Miami Marlins coverage. Miami, usually. But today, there will be a splash of Florida Marlins in the conversation too, because our amazing guest is the World Series champion, the two-time MLB All-Star, the four-time Gold Glove Award winner. He's one of the most important players in the history of the franchise, Charles Johnson. We appreciate you, CJ. Thank you for joining us.
Hey, I'm really glad to be here.
And there's a whole lot going on. As I said, right before we started recording, really fascinated to find out what you're doing with this collegiate summer league, this wood bat league up in Fort Pierce that gets started in less than a couple months. But while we have you on, a lot of topics we wanted to get to just hear your thoughts on the current state of the Marlins, the current state of baseball in general. And we'll just start with the 2021 Marlins team. I mean, as we're recording this, they just finished off another win. I know you were following the team closely last year when they made that surprise run into the playoffs. How much do you get to watch the team this year, and what like individual players really stick out to you?
Well, you know, I watched the team this year periodically. Because of the COVID, with me being the ambassador of the Marlins, some of my duties going to the field have definitely limited. So I haven't really been going to the field and really been paying attention completely what's going on with the Marlins. But I'm always enjoy watching the Marlins. I mean, they have some really good, great young talent. And, you know, with Aguilar, I mean, he's doing his thing. And I love the excitement and the energy of Jazz. And I'm just really happy for him. And the way he's been playing and what he's been doing, I'm really excited. You know, with the Marlins, with Alcantara and Lopez, those are two of my main guys. I love to watch. With me being a catcher, I know they're the workhorses, and so I know things are going to pull around for them as far as in the win column, because it's a long season. But at the end of the day, I enjoy watching those guys.
Well, I'm glad you mentioned Jazz, because at the moment, he might be emerging as the face of the team. He's already one of the best players on the team based on what we've seen, you know, this first full month of his rookie season, but definitely someone that kind of transcends Miami, right? Like, we're seeing all around baseball, people take notice of what he's doing. And I mean, you could correct me if I'm wrong, but I think you've known him going back a little while. I know for sure when they had that home run derby in Paradise out in the Bahamas, last time that they were able to do that, January 2020, that was right before Jazz got to debut in the majors, but he was in the organization. And I mean, from what I saw, you were over there as, you know, part of this MLB Play Ball initiative. When did you actually meet Jazz in the first place? And obviously your thoughts on how amazing and exciting he's been so far this season.
Well, I definitely know Jazz as far as home run derby, the Don't Blink Charles Johnson home run derby, which I enjoyed being a part of over the last 3 or 4 years, just really seeing some of those young guys in the Bahamas and throughout the Caribbean to really start making them emerge into the game of baseball. And I have some close ties. My wife family is from the Bahamas, so her entire family's from there. So I used to make trips over there all the time in the Bahamas. And I used to pass out the Charles Johnson Catching Award for many years over in the Bahamas. And so I definitely got some ties there. And so for me to be able to see Jazz and see him do his thing. It's just really exciting because I know Bahamas is excited about him, and I get a lot of texts from the Bahamas about how well he's doing. And what I like about Jazz too is that he's bringing something to the game I think the game has definitely been missing, and that is base stealing. Because when I came in the league, there were a lot of base stealers. I came in the league with Ricky Henderson and guys like Deion Sanders, Vince Coleman. Those guys they changed the game of baseball as far as stealing bases. And the game was really exciting. And so for me to see Jazz doing this thing, making the game really exciting and stealing bases and, you know, hitting home runs. And now he has that blue hair thing he has going on. So, I mean, he's just a joy to watch.
Yeah, as you were saying, I mean, seven stolen bases and hasn't been caught yet by anybody, right up there with the league leaders. I mean, it's impressive, but yeah. I mean, a lot of that is because teams are worried about guys getting thrown out on the bases, and they value those outs so much, right? They don't want to give anything away. So one of the few guys that get that green light are the ones like Jazz that are successful every single time.
Yes, he definitely should get that green light. I mean, he definitely changed the game when he on the base path. And that's what I loved about the game of baseball when I came in the league. It was all about stealing bases, bunting guys over, getting guys over, really playing the game as far as sacrifice flies. And it was all the stuff going on, whereas in the National League, it was all about execution. And so I really enjoy to see that, the excitement that he brings to the game.
When it comes to looking at baseball today and some of the other changes that are coming, we're recording this just a few days before the minor league season gets started. And for the first time in minor league regular season games, at least at the low A level, they're going to have this automated strike zone, automatic balls and strikes from programming it in advance and taking the human error out of the situation behind the plate. Still could be a little while off before we see that in the majors. But for right now, we have actual, future major leaguers that are going to be learning their game with that automated strike zone, and especially obviously catchers, where this is at least from the best that we could tell at the major league level, the best guys at framing pitches, at presenting pitches, that they can make a real impact for that part of their game. And now that it's starting to work its way up pro baseball with potentially not having that element involved with it, or as a catcher and as someone that works hands-on with developing catchers, are you a fan? Are you not a fan of having this setup where things are all automatic and where that little sleight of glove where that doesn't make a difference anymore?
As a hitter, I would be a fan because I know I get some precise calls. But as a catcher, it definitely would take the fun out of it as far as me as a catcher being behind the plate and framing balls and really saving pitches for pitchers. It keeps me focused all the time, whereas that I'm aware of what I'm doing as far as helping the pitcher out. And so if that comes into play, I think you're going to have a whole bunch of catchers that's pretty much just going to be just there catching the ball rather than, I think, working hard to save pitches for pitchers.
Do you really feel it behind the plate in certain games where you feel like that's made a difference between wins and losses when you've had certain games, depending on the ump or depending on the pitcher that you're working with, where you feel like those borderline calls actually change the outcome and that that part is coming out of the game too?
It definitely changed the outcome. And for me, what it does is that it gives the pitcher momentum. I mean, he can be ball one, ball two, and all of a sudden I frame a nice one on the corner, and now you 2-1, and all of a sudden now he's 2-2, and now he's back in the game again as far as he found something different, he's feeling something. And so a catcher is so tremendous behind home plate because the way his energy behind the plate, what he brings to the team, the way he frames balls behind home plate, his leadership role behind home plate. So to me, the catcher brings a lot to the game of baseball. That one of the reasons why I decided to catch. I mean, I was a left fielder when I started catching in Little League, and I decided to catch because I was bored. In Little League, you don't get much action out in the outfield. And so I decided I wanted to catch it. And I told my coach Jimbo I wanted to get behind the plate, and that's when I started catching. I came home and told my dad I wanted to be a catcher. And And that's where I started, you know, back when I was 9 years old, because I was bored in outfield.
I can relate to that so well, man, because I started playing Little League almost about the same age, and they stuck me in the outfield. The message that sends is that when you're that young, nobody's hitting it to the outfield, so they put you there when you're not very good. And from there, I didn't follow the same path as you. You know, I stayed in the outfield until I retired from the game. But yeah, I can understand that about those games and how you definitely do lose focus out there. You accomplish other things, you know, looking at the grass and just chewing gum. And it's, I could definitely relate to that for sure. One other thing that happened very recently here in baseball, I'm sure you heard about it, is Madison Bumgarner pitching a no-hitter, only a seven-inning no-hitter. And there's been a big controversy about Major League Baseball not officially recognizing it as a no-no because it was only a seven-inning doubleheader game instead of a full nine innings. And we thought you'd be the perfect guy to talk to this about because you caught one, two, three. You got three right. No-hitters with the Marlins. You could correct me if I'm forgetting ones with your other teams, if it's actually more than three. Is that it?
Nope, or were there others? Three. It's three. Yes, it is.
Uh-huh. Right. And those were all back in the old days when you played nine innings for every game. So those were all full right. nine inning no hitters. As a catcher, I mean, if you were in that situation, well, as they were a few days ago, where it's a seven inning game, but you guys do everything great. You pitch a no-no, you don't allow every single hit. Do you think that would feel the same as going a full nine? You think that that kind of achievement should be counted the same way as a full nine innings?
You played an official ball game, you played seven innings, and it's official. And so it's in the books. And so I can understand the other side of it, whereas that nine innings is a true game. And the nine innings is totally different because anything can happen within 2 innings. I mean, anything can happen. Whereas that, I mean, you know, guys can hit plenty home runs in 2 innings, but I truly believe that if it's official, then I believe a no-hitter should be counted in the books. Yes.
Yeah. Well, while we're on that subject, we had one of our readers reach out when they knew you were coming on. They wanted to ask you about the no-hitters, the three, for people that aren't familiar, Al Leiter, Kevin Brown, A.J. Burnett, all three of them a little bit different or a lot different with how you actually got the job done. Out of those three, was there one day of those three that sticks out as the one where the guy was the most dominant, where you felt really confident all the way, like from start to finish, that they could actually throw a no-no? Does one of them stick out as what was, like, I guess, the most impressive game that you ever caught, the one where that guy really had it locked in and didn't need much help at all from the rest of the team?
I think the one that's probably most impressed with the most was Kevin Brown, no-hitter in San Francisco. He basically threw a perfect game. In the ninth inning, he hit a batter. And that's basically killed this perfect game. But when that game started, I almost felt something was incredible happened that day. Because when he left out of the bullpen, it just felt so good. I mean, he had a tilt on his sinker, was like crazy. And so in San Francisco, you always got this little swirling wind that goes on there, an old candlestick, right? And so you got all this swirling wind. You got a guy throwing a sinker like huge tilt on it. And when the game started, I'm looking at his ball, and it was looking like a frisbee. And I'm saying to myself, I don't think nobody's going to hit this guy today. But at the end of the day, as a catcher, you're not going to say anything. But I felt something was going to be weird that day. And sure enough, he almost threw a perfect game. And I think that was probably the most dominant game. But I would say probably A.J. Burnett was probably one of the most wildest games, no hitters I've ever caught, because I have never seen anybody throw almost 128 pitches. And probably, don't quote me, but I think about 123 were fastballs. So he threw like 123 fastballs and threw a no-hitter. So he walked like nine guys. We turned two double plays. And it was so much going on during the game, whereas it didn't feel like he was throwing a no-hitter because there were so many guys on base that it didn't feel like a no-hitter. But at the end of the day, he threw a no-hitter, and that was a wild, wild game.
Yeah, well, that was when he was right at the start of his career, AJ, And as years went on, as he left the Marlins, as things went on, he developed this really nasty curveball. And I mean, that would be his putaway pitch, like from like the best years of his career. But that was a different phase of his career. It's kind of crazy where he was at that stage where he was still kind of developing and like finding his footing. And that was when he threw the no hitter, but actually probably later in his career, he became that more complete pitcher. And that's, really was more valuable to the team, you know, one start after the start.
But he's always had a great curveball. I mean, his curveball would explode out of his hand, even like his fastball. I mean, I probably didn't catch very few guys like AJ, where is that the ball gets up on you so fast that it just comes out of his hand like a bullet. And it just gets on you really fast. But his curveball was just, I mean, left-handed hitters couldn't hit his curveball at times because he was just that good.
One more thing on this subject when it comes to pitching and what actually works and what actually leads to these kind of no-hitter situations is, I think this is a question that people still kind of wrestle with today. You know, baseball's been around 150 years or more, but people still try to figure out with pitching whether it's more important to have great stuff or to have great command. And I guess on some days you have both of them. On other days, you may only have one and still have a lot of success. Including, I guess, with AJ in that performance where all the walks that were piling up in that game and yet still able to have success because of the quality of his fastball. But which piece of that equation do you think is more important for a pitcher to actually be consistent and successful? Is it the command of their pitches or is it the quality of their stuff?
I'm going to say the command of their pitches. Most guys, when they come in the league, they come in the league with great stuff. In order to stay in the league, you have to learn how to pitch. And so when guys start to learn you, they start to figure out a little bit, you have to learn how to pitch. And so when I came to the league, you had guys like, say, Greg Maddux, Tom Glavine, you know, being in the same division, we played them a lot. And so they didn't throw very hard. They threw low 90s, that kind of stuff, but they knew how to pitch. And so I think if guys come in the league and they learn how to pitch early, no question about it. And you have great stuff. I mean, just lights out. I mean, one of the young guys I know when I first started catching, I felt that he kind of had that a little bit was Josh Beckett. He was that guy where that he had great stuff, but he had somewhat of an idea how to pitch when he first came in the league. And when I first started catching, he had an idea about what he wanted to do with great stuff. And you rarely see that because usually a guy with great stuff, they just want to throw by guys, but he had a good idea.
Symbol, the stock market for sports. Symbol allows you to trade sports teams like stocks and earn cash payouts when your team win. Could be short-term flipping. It could be a long-term investment in this Marlins team to finally turn their corner on the rebuild. Symbol has blended sports and the stock market to give you that new way to invest in and profit off your favorite teams. Use your sports knowledge to earn these cash payouts when the teams win. Join 2,000 plus early adopters who are already using this platform. Create a free account at www.simbull.app, symbol.app, and use our promo code FISHSTRIPES. It gives you a $10 deposit bonus. Visit symbol.app, promo code FISHSTRIPES, all one word, for your $10 deposit bonus to help build your portfolio. Invest in what you know, invest in sports. Right. We're talking, of course, with Charles Johnson here, the former Marlins great, just a great baseball man through and through. And the real reason why we wanted to talk to him right now on this pod, among many other things, is, of course, about this Summer Collegiate Baseball League that he has lended his name to. The Charles Johnson Collegiate Summer League gets started in less than 2 months. That's kind of why Hector is actually on here with me. So he had a lot of questions about exactly what you're doing with the league and how it, I guess we'll just start with the general stuff before I hand it over to Hector. How did this come about in the first place? Because I know you've, I guess for years now, you've shown this interest in coaching up young players and making them better and just giving back to the game. How did this particular league come about?
It came about through, you know, a good friend of mine, Mario Cingarelli. I mean, I've known Mario since way back in my early days of being with the Marlins, and we've been friends, you know, ever since. And he approached me about this league in Fort Pierce, and it was very intriguing to me because me born and raised in Fort Pierce, and my family and my sister, brother, mom, dad, all still live there. All my family is there. And he brought me and said, hey, we can, you know, definitely create a league there. And I said, you know what? I can definitely put my name on because I know definitely Mario does a great job as far as forming leagues like this. And I'm very excited about it because I truly believe it's going to really bring a lot of young players together. Definitely going to be some great baseball. But at the same time, I mean, they're going to learn life skills. And I truly believe that it's going to be, a great thing for these young kids.
So, Charles, what is your plan really with these kids? So, I imagine you, summer collegiate ball was around when you were at UM, correct?
Yes, it is.
First, just talk about how your experiences were. Were you able to experience Cape Cod while you were at Miami? Or, you know, what type of league did you play in during your time at the U?
My summer leagues at the U were spent mostly playing in the Pan American Games and really playing in Olympics. So I didn't do like the Cape Cod League and everything else because just fortunately enough that my years were coming up toward the 1992 Olympics in Barcelona at the time. And that was a dream team year and they had a dream team there. And so my years was coming up to that. So I spent a lot of time trying to make that team. And so that was my summer years.
All right. How was that experience? Just talk about that. I mean, that's gotta be a pretty cool experience. I played college ball, but I wasn't good enough to get to try out for the USA national team.
I mean, it was an experience. I've always been part of the USA experience. Even in high school, I played on the junior Olympic team in Australia and won a gold medal in Melbourne against the Cuban team when I was in high school. And so that kind of led me to really take a shot at the Olympics. And I did my whole Olympic trial and everything. And I ended up making the team and played in the Pan American Games in Cuba. Really enjoyed that experience. I played in Havana, played in Santiago, Cuba. Had a chance to, make the Olympic team. And just being able to wear USA across your chest and walk into a stadium. And at the time, you come into the stadium in alphabetical order. You have baseball, you know, basketball. And so at the time, baseball and basketball came out together. And so we walking out with a dream team. So I got, you know, Magic Johnson and Michael Jordan and Larry Bird walking out in the stadium with USA across our chest. We wearing our hats. And so it was a wonderful experience for me.
Did you ever get a chance to talk to anybody on the dream team while you were there?
I talked to Charles Barkley because Barkley will come to the village a lot and he will hang around in the village. And I got a chance to talk to him a little bit, but I never had a chance to talk to them because they stayed away from the village. So they didn't stay with us in the village. And periodically a guy or two would come over, but I mean, they were so big at that point. I don't think nobody could get to them at that time.
Yeah. So, I can imagine how exciting that was, but I want to talk about your, you know, the league that you're a part of, you know, but so, I mean, how many teams, what's the plan there? Are you going to start this upcoming summer and how many teams and how many games do you plan on playing this season?
I mean, it's going to be like six teams. I mean, we're looking at playing pretty much throughout the summer, pretty much like 32 games in the area from like the end of June, June 25th through August 6th. And I think it's going to be a great experience. We're going to have seminars for these young kids. We're going to have specialized training when you're going to have guys like Alex Arias, which is a former teammate of mine with the Marlins. He's going to be there working on hitting with the young guys. We're going to have Pupo. Tony Afaseka is going to be there working with the pitchers. And so we're looking to bring on some more guys. But our main thing is really teaching them and really develop these kids. So it's all about development, but at the same time, give them life skills. And that's really what our focus is going to be on. And also, too, at the end, we're looking at having a pro day where we're hoping to bring in some scouts, have an opportunity for these kids to play in a game at the end, also a game and really recognize some of the really good kids there and hopefully give them opportunity to move on as far as bringing some scouts out and bringing some other folks out to see them play.
Yeah, CJ, I'd seen that detail about your teammates, about Alfonseca and Arias being involved in this. Did you have to like recruit them? Like, what was that process like? Were they like all ready to get back into coaching, or did you have to do a little convincing? How did that all play out to get them to commit to do this? Because that's it's a great opportunity for the kids.
Great opportunity. I know Mario reached out to both of them as far as really trying to come on board, and I spoke to him about it. About coming on board, and both of them are already doing things at this point now. I mean, I know Alfonseca is coaching in some leagues, and I know Alex is always around the game of baseball, and both of them are very good teachers. They understand the game, and you know, they have a very good mindset about the game, and so I'm very excited for them to come on board and be there at Fort Pierce and play at you know, at Longwood Complex, where I played my high school ball at.
Is this league available to just any type of college player, like from the Division I level all the way down to the junior college ranks?
Yes, it is. Yes, it is. I mean, you know, you're 18 to 23. And so, you know, it might be some kids that's pretty much, you know, at the end of their high school career that definitely can participate in this league. And so, yes, no question about it. I'm hoping for it to be a very competitive league. We really doing a good job as far as trying to get the information out there, whereas that to bring in some really good kids, I'm pretty sure, because in the area I've been hearing a lot of what's going on, and I think it's going to be a competitive league. But at the end of the day, it's, for me, it's all about developing these kids and giving them life skills. So I'm definitely going to have my own personal catching seminar and clinic, working with some young kids that want to be catchers, and we're going to have a seminar and bring other folks in to really talk to these young kids, because we got to keep them busy. Got to keep them educated and keep their mind going, because they're going to be there for some weeks. So yes, it's going to be a lot more things we're going to add to it along the way.
Hey, it's Kaylee Cuoco for Priceline. Ready to go to your happy place for a happy price? Well, why didn't you say so? Just download the Priceline app right now and save up to 60% on hotels. So whether it's Cousin Kevin's Kazoo concert in Kansas City, go Kevin, or Becky's Bachelorette Bash in Bermuda, you never have to miss a trip ever again. So download the Priceline app today. Your savings are waiting.
Go to your happy place for a happy price. Go to your happy price, Priceline.
Yeah, well, as we're talking right now, it seems, you know, fingers crossed, we could see the light at the end of this tunnel when it comes to COVID-19 and the pandemic. Yeah. Unfortunately, last summer, I think just about every summer league had to, you know, shut it down for the summer, just because we didn't know what we were dealing with. We didn't know how to keep people safe. Hopefully a couple months away from now, you know, almost everybody gets an opportunity to get vaccinated and things go pretty easily. But are there any special, you know, precautions that the league has to set up, you know, to make sure that everybody stays safe and that there's no shutdowns? Because we've seen it even in Major League Baseball this year, where some teams have their own mini outbreaks and it causes inconveniences. So are there any special steps that you guys had to implement to make sure that, you know, that the parents feel safe sending their kids over there, and to make sure that, you know, you get all the games and that you want to?
Well, we're definitely going to, you know, have our, as far as our kids being careful, I mean, we're definitely going to have our mask wearing, and hopefully by the time we get to that point, maybe we have some kids getting vaccinated, because I know my kids now are the age of 20, 21, and they play football. So I'm definitely looking for them to get vaccinated. So hopefully, when we get to that point, maybe some kids are already vaccinated, but at the same time, we're going to take steps to really take care of these young kids and make sure that they're mask wearing, you know, to keep their distance and really look out for them.
Just make sure we're up to speed on how exactly to apply to this, and how can people make sure that they get all the info that they want about this league and reserve their spots while you still have some few spots available.
Well, they definitely need to go to cbottournaments.com, and that's where they really can get on the website and really find out more information and where the kids can sign up and sign waivers and everything else. And I think, like I said, I think it's going to be an exciting league. It's our first time doing it. So there are definitely going to be some glitches we got to definitely iron out. But at the end of the day, I think that it's going to be a competitive league, and I'm definitely waiting for it.
Awesome. Awesome. Anything else, Hector, that you wanted to get from CJ about the league or any of that?
No, not really. I'm pretty good here. Just, you know, good luck with your inaugural season, and you know, we, Eli and I and everybody at Fish Stripes, you know, wish you the best of luck during your first season.
Well, I tell you what, Fish Stripes, I'm definitely going to be following you guys.
There we go.
Perfect. You can find us everywhere, man. You can find us on Instagram, on Twitter, on YouTube, on fishstripes.com. Our listeners know that, and we appreciate everybody for subscribing. We appreciate the people that send in the questions for CJ. And yes. I mean, as I was telling you before we started recording, you're a star to these people, even now, among Marlins fans. They still appreciate everything you did. We have these special ceremonies every spring where we honor our own Marlins Hall of Famers for guys that had a unique contribution to the franchise. And you're the first catcher that got in as part of that Marlins Hall of Fame.
Wow.
Yeah.
Wow.
People know that you were here a while, that you were great for a while, and that you were, you know, most importantly, a champion. So I just hope you know that everybody, that your legacy still lives on. And I honestly, it's like a fine wine. I think as we get further away, people even appreciate it more.
I tell you what, I really appreciate that. I've always enjoyed my time here. I had a chance to come here to the University of Miami, and I think I gained a lot of fans there because at that time there was no Florida Marlins. And so Miami baseball was baseball here in South Florida. And I think I really gained a lot of fans from playing there. And so for me to have opportunity to be drafted by the Marlins and play a pro player when it first got going in 94, when I first came up, it was such a surreal experience because I never thought that I would be a Florida Marlin and let alone win a championship in 97 with the Florida Marlins in my third year in the league. And so I've really appreciated all my fans that have followed me all the years. I've always felt the love and appreciation for it. Every time I see people out, they mention, oh yeah, Charlie Johnson, you played in the 97 World Series, or Charlie Johnson, I remember from University of Miami. And so I definitely made home here in South Florida. And I will live nowhere else. I enjoy this place.
And the last thing before we get you out here, I remember, of course, with the 25th anniversary celebration a couple of years ago, you were big involved in that. And I know you continue to be all over the place as an ambassador with the team. When was the last time, though, that you were able to actually attend a game in the ballpark with the Marlins? We know that last year was kind of off limits. When's the next time you think that you're going to be able to make it out there for a game and finally get to reunite with everybody once it's safe to do so?
I tell you, I hope. I went out for opening day. I was there for opening day.
Oh, perfect. Yeah.
Yeah, such a great time. Yeah, it was different with the little social distance with the mask on, but at the same time, it was just good to feel that opening day feeling. Just knowing how that feels in opening day, all the butterflies and the nervousness of it's a new season, not knowing what's going to happen. Your average is zero, and so everybody is hitting 1,000, and so you just don't know what's going to happen on opening day, and I know what that feels like, and so I was so excited just to be there. And I'm hoping to get out to some games pretty soon. Like I say, with me being an ambassador, some of my roles got cut back because of the COVID. And a lot will pick up more in the summer from what I'm told. And so I can't wait for it.
Yeah, man. The team continues playing really solid ball. There's going to be that demand for it. There's going to be all these fans up and about, and they're excited. And, yeah, they're dreaming. They're dreaming of a team that plays like the 97 team or the 2003 team. And, they can start smelling it a little bit with the way that some of the stars have emerged so far early on this season. But Charles Johnson, the Marlins great. We appreciate you joining us here on the pod. Eli Sussman with Hector Rodriguez. And guys, if you have anybody of the right age to get involved in this Wood Bat League, the Charles Johnson Collegiate Summer League up in Fort Pierce, first games get started in late June. Make sure you're registering right now. We're going to put all the information. We're going to make it easy. We're going to put the info right up there on our website so that people could just click straight to it and get all the details and just see what a fun time and what an important time this is going to potentially be for, you know, young players that are trying to take that next step in their development. So thank you, CJ. We appreciate you, and we hope to have you back in the future.
Yes. All right. Eli, Hector, thank you, guys. I appreciate you.